Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta have it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to join us over in the Discord room. You can get a link to that off of the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage. That's newbees.com. You can also check out bestbeekeepinggear.com as well. We got a lot of articles and things we're writing up. We have a lot of things that we discuss regularly in the Discord room, things that come up in emails, and it just kind of made sense to start doing some write-ups so that we don't have to kind of answer the same things over and over again and provide a little bit more detail. So hopefully that's helpful for you. And you can go to youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. You can listen to the podcast there if you'd like as well. We've got a couple of videos, not a whole lot of new content over there right now, but we're still working on a few things that we should be rolling out here one of these days. Today's warm-up song is Iris, brought to you by the Goo Goo Dolls. And for some reason, I don't know why I want to keep calling them the Google Dolls today. But anyway, today is all about honey. And we're talking specifically about extraction techniques and some kind of do's and don'ts around just generally how you should be approaching things, things to consider, and a couple of different options. So we got a whole lot to cover today, so it should be fairly thorough. There are a few things we've covered before that we're not going to, you know, kind of cover again. But if you have a follow-on question, you know, jump in there, the Discord room, send us a message. You can always email me, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's just, there's a lot going on. It's a busy time, and I don't want to have you waiting forever to hear back from me. You're pretty lucky to get a response from somebody in the Discord room there. Okay, now one thing that we're not going to talk about today is anything from like a business standpoint or a commercial standpoint. If you have, for example, if you're bottling honey for yourself, you pretty much do whatever you want to do. If you are bottling honey for consumer, you know, for consumption by others, there are going to be different, you know, local and state requirements around how you label things. If you are doing it, you know, in a facility, there may be a requirement to have an inspection of that facility done. So there's lots of different things that you're going to need to consider if you're trying to do this as a business. So this really is just a discussion strictly around private use honey extraction. Now, one common thing you'll hear me say pretty regularly in the beekeeping world is about how important it is, at least in my opinion, to work with a mentor, and hopefully they can provide you with some guidance on, you know, what will or will not or should not work in your area. I feel like sometimes maybe we're expecting too much. And when I say that, I mean you know, there's definitely a shortage of mentors. And I think as the years go by, I know for me, like 13, 14 years in, whatever it is, I'm learning new things all the time. I have immersed myself in it from multiple different angles. I talk to probably hundreds of people every week. There's always things that pop up that I have no idea about, haven't heard of, aren't familiar with, don't have exposure to. So it's this constantly learning process. So a lot of mentors are people who maybe aren't, you know, 5-10 year beekeepers. Maybe they've only been keeping bees for 2 or 3 years. But, you know, to me, having somebody with 2 or 3 years of good experience is better than nothing, right? As long as everybody's transparent with each other and they say, look, and I've only been doing this for a couple of years, but I'm sure I can help you learn how to do an inspection. I'm sure I can help you with some of these basics. So don't put too much on your mentor. I think we all need to have realistic expectations. But hopefully, if everything goes the way we'd like it to, you can have a mentor who says, hey, look, I've been beekeeping this area for a long time. You're going to need X amount of pounds or X amount of supers of honey for your bees to overwinter. So having that knowledge really helps you to kind of get a mental idea of what a good baseline would be for your hives. So a lot of beekeepers will do that strictly by weight. They'll weigh the hive and they say, we know going into winter, the whole hive body, like everything, the stand and everything needs to be, let's say, 100 pounds. Others may weigh individual components and say, well, we just weigh our honey supers and we need to have at least, you know, 60 pounds across 3 or 4 honey supers and we know we're good. There are a lot of different ways and, you know, over time you'll find one that works best for you. But to get a good baseline, if you're doing things around weight, what you do want to do is get a good measurement of everything when these hive components are completely empty, when they're brand new. Let's say you made a decision, you're going to have 5 colonies and you're doing 2 deeps for each one, and you want to have 200 or 300 honey supers for each one. Like, you don't have to weigh 50 different hive bodies. You say, okay, well, this is what my empty mediums weigh with this, you know, particular setup. This is what my empty deeps weigh with this setup. Here's my bottom board. So you get the weights of all of the things that you have that make up whatever your baseline is. And then from there on, you just take your measurements and subtract that out. But that's definitely a good starting point. Now, how people get to that measurement can be different. You can physically lift up the hive body, set it down on the scale, take your measurement. You can step on the scale, and let's say you weigh 150 pounds, and then you step off, you pick up the hive body, you step on the scale, it now says 160. Okay, the empty weight is 10 pounds. Something like that. You know, again, find something that works for you to get those measurements if you're going to be doing it, you know, based on weight. So I'm going to just kind of run through, I don't know, I think I got about 4 or 5 different options here on ways that you can make these measurements. This, it's not really meant to be like an all-inclusive, like here are the only ways you can do this and that's it. It's really just throwing some ideas out there to kind of get the gears turning in your brain to come up with some ideas that might work for you. I've done a couple of these before and I haven't done any of them in a while, and they all have kind of their pros and cons, but we'll run through them real quick. So the one method is lifting with a tractor, farm tractor, garden tractor, excavator, whatever you happen to have around. And this is definitely like a team thing. You want to have a pal or a buddy working with you. But you can wrap a strap. I recommend like a doubled kind of strap, making a crisscross under the hive. Hook that to a scale, some kind of a D-ring to a scale, and then another strap hooking it onto the bucket. And then just lift straight up, get your weight, set it back down, move on to the next one. As long as you have like a good solid bottom board, you've maybe put a ratchet strap around so that if there's any movement, the outer cover doesn't come off, and you have one person's working the equipment, one person is keeping things stable as the hive goes up and then comes back down, and they're looking at the scale, taking the measurement. That's one way to do it. It's fine. Nothing wrong with that. So the next method is basically where you're going to take 2 measurements. You're going to measure from the front and from the back, and then you'll combine the 2 weights. So what you'll do with this is, let's say that you have a hive stand like I've done in a couple of my videos where you've got like 4 legs. I would look at maybe either doing like a 6-inch wide strip of plywood, or maybe a 2x6, something that's a little bit larger than the size of the actual legs themselves. But you want to be able to lift the whole front or the whole back as one unit. So you could lift up the front on that, let's say 2x6, set that down on the scale, take that measurement. Go to the back, lift up the back, set it on the scale, take that measurement, add them together, and that's going to give you a rough estimate of what the hive should weigh. Now, in this method that we just discussed here, you're getting two measurements because you're dividing, you're basically taking the front, the back, putting them together. And yeah, it's kind of a little bit goofy. It does require a helper. And if you're going to do that, I definitely recommend, you know, with a lot of these, closing up the entrance first, because there's a lot of movement up and down. The bees aren't going to like it. So keep everything closed up so that they can't come out and let you know how unhappy they are by your activity. But on this next method, the way that I would do it would be same thing with like a 6-inch wide by maybe 20-inch long piece of plywood. Lift up the back, set the back legs onto that piece of plywood, which is sitting on the scale, and then you would lift the entire hive body up to a point of equilibrium. So you're basically where you can kind of almost just hold it up with a couple of fingers because it's in perfect balance. Now, the bees are not going to love this, right? I've seen this method done once years ago. A couple of guys did it. They were very quick, very efficient with it, and they got measurements to accurate to within a couple of pounds. I think they were within 3 or 4 pounds for most of their measurements. It was goofy. It looked kind of disruptive. It just kind of depends on your bees and the time of year and where you're doing it, but it was pretty fast. You know, they got a little system down where they just threw the board under on top of the scale, lifted the back, set it down, lift the front, get it balanced, take a reading. I think they even cut a big hole in the plywood right over where the scale is supposed to be so that they can read the numbers, set it back down, record the number, go to the next one. That's, again, one where you probably could do it alone, but it's definitely better to have a partner or a helper. And then I would say the final method, which is really easy. And, you know, if you're doing a full inspection, you know, particularly towards the end of the year, you're wrapping things up. You want to make sure that they're ready to go into the fall, you know, to go into the fall and the winter strong, is to just basically have your scale out there, probably put it on a piece of plywood or something to give a good solid base for it. And then you're going to step on, get your weight, step off, grab the hive body, step back on, take the weight again. Or if you can still read everything, you know, if you can read the display on your scale with the hive body on the plywood, perfect. That's even better. That way you don't have to try and stand there and do math and all that. But you can just weigh individual hive bodies as long as you have a scale that can accommodate that. So you can start from the top, outer cover, inner cover, you know, throw those down on the scale, catch the weight of those, move those off. First medium, second medium, next deep, whatever you have on there, add them all up and then put it all back together and you know what your total weight is. Now that's great when you're in season and you can tear everything apart. But if it's, let's say, January or February in the Northern Hemisphere and you want to take a measurement, you know, during the time where, you know, you're coming up on spring, you're maybe still a month or two out, and you want to get an idea of how much of those resources have been used, then you're probably going to need to do one of the other methods that we just discussed, which can be done, you know, with the hive completely closed up. It's non-invasive. And I would recommend with that probably not doing the super big tilt method. Again, you don't want them getting angry, breaking the cluster, coming out to try to defend things when it's actually too cold for them to be outside. You don't want to put them under that kind of stress. But doing a late winter measurement, you know, for weight is definitely not a bad idea to get a rough estimate of how many resources have been used. So I guess the key takeaway with all that is doing the weights and everything. It's kind of a pain in the butt, but it's a pretty good idea. Now, once you get that down, or once you know what that looks like, or if you have a mentor who can tell you, like, hey, this is what I've done, you know, over the so many years and it's worked really well, you'll start to learn, okay, as long as I have at least 4 frames of honey within my 2 deeps and a full medium, then I know that we're going to be fine, right? You start to know what you need to look for within your colony. And that's a great method too, right? It's not as precise and it's not measurable and it's not necessarily scientific, but do you need it to be, right? You just need to make sure they've got the resources they need to overwinter. So just eyeballing it based on a known quantity of honey frames that are present can be one way that you can do this as well. Now, we're doing all of this background information around weighing hives and assessing how much honey is there and trying to figure out what they need to overwinter. All of this is geared around, should I or should I not be taking honey from the bees? I can tell you that you're going to feel bad if you're like semi-normal anyway. You're going to feel really bad. Like the first year I harvested honey, I was so excited. I only harvested, I think, like a medium. I took like 1 medium from a hive that I had. And I was so excited. I had all this honey and everything was great. And like, I think it was towards the middle end of the summer, we had our regular dearth and they had plowed through everything they gathered up in the spring. And if I had left what I took, they would have been fine to make it through the summer. And they had a little fall flow, maybe a little extra feeding, and they would have overwintered. Probably wouldn't have been a problem. And I'm pretty sure I lost them that summer. I don't even think they got to like the fall ramp up. And I felt really, really bad. I didn't know any better, and I kind of didn't follow the guidance I just kind of laid out here. So the first recommendation that I make is for first-year beekeepers, I recommend that you don't take honey. Now, whenever you say something in beekeeping, I promise you there's always like a 500,000 people that have already done it successfully and it worked out great for them, and I don't know why you don't do it too kind of thing, right? I guarantee you, like, somebody will email and go, well, every year I start 10 packages and every year I harvest 20 pounds, 30 pounds, 50 pounds of honey from them. I'm not saying you can't do it. What I'm saying is if you are a new beekeeper, you are new to beekeeping in your area, even if you know beekeeping in one place, but you move 100 miles or 1,000 miles away, bees may not really want to live or have the ability to find sufficient forage where you've moved. Take a season, just kind of feel things out. Let them do their thing. Let them work their magic. And then you can assess how well they overwinter and then see what's left over. You can always be sitting around in like April or May of the next year and say, wow, look at all this leftover honey. I think I'll pull a couple frames, or I'll pull a super off and take some for myself right now while we're on this big flow. It'll reduce that desire for them to swarm because they'll have all this extra space now, and I can have some honey. But harvesting honey in the first year, I think, introduces a lot of challenges, again, for new beekeepers, even experienced beekeepers. Like I said, if you're changing areas or you're somewhere new, or the flow is different. You may have one year where you had an amazing flow and your bees packed away like 100 pounds of honey and only used 40 or 50 to make it through the winter. And next year you're like, man, this is great. I'm taking 50 pounds. And you have a lot of rain, a lot of terrible weather, and at different times when you really don't want that. Maybe some bad storms came through and things really disrupted the fall flow. Every year is going to be a little bit different. So planning a little bit of a buffer in there to have a little bit of extra is certainly going to be a good idea. So now you've made the decision. You're like, okay, I know what my baseline looks like. I'm working with my mentor. They said I need to have at least this much. I've got two times as much. I'm going to go ahead and pull some honey. We're going to make this happen. So what frames do we take? This is actually a really common question, and it's a good question. People message regularly like, hey, I've got these frames here. You know, I got Honey Super, and six of them are completely capped, but four of them aren't. You know, what do I do? What can I do? So the short answer to that is the bees will cap the honey when the moisture content gets down to somewhere around 18%. Maybe they cap it at 19%. Maybe it's around 17%. They don't use a refractometer. They just kind of gauge it based on their knowledge, their vast knowledge of honey management. They cap it when it's right for them. But the whole reason that it's open is it's just waiting for the excess moisture to evaporate. So if you open up, like the example I just gave with the Honey Super, let's say you had six of them that were fully capped. My position on this may be different from someone else's, but if I'm extracting honey that I'm giving away or selling to somebody else, I'm only extracting things that are 100% capped. Now, I think most people will tell you, like, yeah, as long as about 90% of the frame is capped, you're okay. And that probably is 100% fine. I just don't do that if it's for somebody else. If it's for me, I know I'm going to be consuming it pretty quickly. I'm not storing it away for 10 years. So if there's a little bit of extra moisture in there for a little piece of that one frame that's being mixed with, you know, a 5-gallon bucket five or six times over because we got a ton of honey, I'm a lot less worried about it. What you can do is if you still have some opens, let's say for whatever reason you have a remote colony and you can only get out to them once a month, it's just not ideal to try to drive back again in 2 weeks to get those last couple of cells capped over. You can go ahead and pull those frames, bring them to your house, and what you can do is you can kind of set them out with the open portions of the cells facing like an oscillating fan in a room. Now, you know, don't be a room where there's pets and cats and things running around, but a room that is protected, and just have the fan oscillating and blowing across. And then what you can do is, like I said, for about $20 on Amazon, you can get a little refractometer and just go for that target moisture around 18%. Do a little sample. When you get to that 18%, go ahead and extract. If it gets below that, great. If it's slightly above that 18.5% or whatever, that's fine. But like I said, 19% was really kind of my high-end threshold. I really want to be closer to 18. So that fan approach can definitely help dry things out. Just, you know, check it, you know, probably if you put it out in the morning, check in the evening. If it's not where it needs to be, let the fan run all night, check again the next morning, and just check every, you know, 6 to 8 hours until it gets to where it needs to be. So now you've got all of that worked out. You know what frames you're extracting. They're at the right moisture content. Everything is ready to go. There was one thing that I meant to mention and I didn't, so I'm going to go back to this. One thing that's really important I recommend is that particularly if you are feeding sugar syrup or if you are using any kind of Varroa treatments that cannot be done with honey supers on that are meant for human consumption. Let's say you had a honey super on and there were three frames that were full from, you know, this spring flow. I would annotate something on them, mark them in some way, and whether it's in your notes or if you've labeled your frames, say, you know, frames 4, 5, and 6 are, you know, spring honey. And then if you had to do a treatment, obviously you're not going to do a treatment with those honey frames in. So if you took them out, did a treatment, but then that hive body, that super went back on with those frames in it, knowing that they were from the fall flow and not sugar syrup is important. Because if you need to supplemental feed them and you've got three frames in the middle that are from the spring flow and 7 other frames that are from sugar syrup, and you kind of forget about that for some reason, you really don't want to be feeding yourself and others like sugar syrup based honey. That's just not really what you want to do. So make sure that you're paying close attention to the instructions and the directions of whatever Varroa treatment method you're using. Just be certain that you're not leaving supers on if you're not supposed to. And be sure to know which ones are which in the event that there's any mixing and matching going on. Honey supers with sugar syrup, honey supers involving Varroa treatments. Definitely keep track of all of that.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
So let's just say that, for example, you've got 2 deeps and 2 medium honey supers. You've got a queen excluder in between them, and you've decided my bees have so much honey right now, they're going to be fine to make it through the summer. There's still a flow on. I'm going to harvest that top honey super. Now, of course, you're going to have bees moving through the entire hive. So what you're going to want to do is come up with a method to get the bees off of the frames with which you want to extract. So option one, there's a YouTube short that I did on this, I think. I don't think I did a full long form video on it, but you can search on the YouTube channel. It's just youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. And it's an escape board. And the thumbnail just looks like a piece of number 8 hardware cloth in a, like a triangle kind of shape. What you do with an escape board is you put the open end towards the top, like a circle. There's a circle, and you put that circle facing up. And you'll put that in between, in the scenario we just discussed, the two honey supers. So the bees can freely move from that honey super and go back down into the one below it, but they can't figure out how to get back in. Now, you're always going to have a couple of stragglers, but I say put that on the night before. So let's say that you wanted to pull those off. Today is Monday when I'm recording. Let's say you wanted to pull those honey supers, you know, tomorrow afternoon, Tuesday afternoon. Go ahead and put the escape board on today. Go back tomorrow, and you should be able to remove that honey super with a minimal amount of bees left inside. Like I said, you're always going to have a few stragglers, but you can just shake them off into the, you know, onto that top honey super or at the entrance or whatever makes sense. And then you just go ahead and close everything back up as normal. Of course, remove the escape board, and you're back in business. There is also, and that would be a method of being like a one-way exit or a one-way escape. There's another method. You know, a lot of people have kind of wondered, like, hey, what's that goofy handle for on the inner cover? Well, there is actually a one-way exit that you can use. It's plastic. A lot of suppliers sell it. And it pops right into that little handle of an inner cover. And it does the exact same thing as the escape board. So what you would do is you would take the inner cover or another inner cover, and you slide that in between the two honey supers with that escape component installed into the handle. And the bees do the exact same thing. They will come out of the honey super up top, and they won't go back in. And then you can remove it just like we discussed with the other method. And like I mentioned, both of those, just leave it in overnight, and by the next day you should be in good shape. The last method that you can do is just manually shaking the bees off. You can just pull the frames out, you know, one by one, shake the bees back, you know, at the entrance or back into the hive. I recommend putting them in the hive if you can. I just like to keep them at home. Remember, these are all inside bees for the most part. They're not out flying yet. You don't want to get them lost. So just shake them back into the hive. And then some people will use a bee brush and try to brush them on. Like every time I've used a bee brush, it makes the bees a little angry. The only thing I actually use a bee brush for is getting bees off of queen cells when I'm removing the queen cells from a cell builder. That way you're not shaking queens. You don't want to violently shake all of these queens that are developing inside of this the cells of these cell builders. So I will then use the brush for that. Outside of that, I don't use a bee brush because they get angry. So just give a good shake, get the bees off the old-fashioned way there. And what I like to do when I'm pulling honey frames off for extraction is I always like to set the frame in and cover the hive body. Get the next frame, get it prepped, get it done, open up, set it inside, close the hive body. I don't want anything else getting in there, trying to rob anything, getting in there and then being transported wherever I'm going, where I plan to extract. There's always going to be bees that sneak into wherever you're extracting, but I try to minimize that as best as possible. So like I said, the manual way is another approach as well. But from there, I usually just set them down into like a tote or some kind of a thing that I can close multiple hive bodies in at the same time. But just find a system that works for you. You could do something as simple as a small piece of plywood, set the hive body down on top of the plywood, have another piece that's cut the same size, and just have one person open the lid, the other one sets the frame in, then you close the lid back down. Piece of cake. All right, so now we got to get to the good stuff here, or the real, this is kind of the hard thing. Honestly, I avoided extraction for a long time because I just kept thinking about how messy it was going to be. I mean, I love honey. Who doesn't love honey? But I just did not want to deal with the mess. So I started doing research and I thought, you know, I need to get one of those fancy, you know, extractors. Now, if you're not familiar with a honey extractor and the way that some of the kind of hobbyist / commercial extractors work, is it's all based on centrifugal force. So once we've gone through the process of completely opening the frames, which we'll discuss here in a second, you're going to spin these frames around as fast as possible with whatever motor or method you're using to make them spin. All of the honey flies out, hits the sidewalls, and then drains down to the bottom. And then you have what they would call a honey gate, or just an opening that then allows it to flow from the extractor into whatever containers you might be storing it in. So when I was first looking at this, I thought, well, maybe I'll get a manual extractor. And what this is it's got a big handle on it. I think that they did maybe 3 or 5 frames. I can't remember exactly. And there's lots of different options. You can definitely get larger and smaller ones. But it was 3 or 4 frames, I think maybe 5 that it would hold of medium, I think it was 5 mediums or 3 deep, something like that. And I thought, well, I'll just get a manual one. So I started doing some research and looking at forums and reading up. And a lot of people were like, yeah, getting a manual one was the worst thing I ever did. Now, of course, there's the whole thing with, oh, yeah, I've got 3 kids, so I just put the kids on the extractor. And that's cool, you know, if you want them to grow up to be big and strong. But cranking a manual extractor will definitely wear you down. I don't think it was that much more money to go from manual to electric. I want to say it was maybe like $100 or $150. So I did that. I went ahead and bought an electrical one. Now, the one that I got was kind of cheaper. I got it from Amazon. And when it got to my house, I tried to turn it on and something didn't work right. And I'm like, well, let me start taking this apart and see if I can figure out what's going on. And in like the electrical box where the actual power to the wall came into the extractor, I think there's 3 wires. There's the white, a black, and a ground. And I think like 2 of them, the hot wire, the black wire, was actually slightly loose and making contact to the housing for it. It was making contact with that. So if I had it plugged in and I touched that casing at the same time, I probably would have shocked myself. So I took everything apart in there and I rewired everything up to make it nice and clean using wire nuts, and I made it right. But that was a little bit concerning. But once I did that, fired it up, it was working fine. One little kind of pro tip I would give you, a lot of them will have 3 or 4 legs to them. I recommend getting a piece of plywood or getting a couple of like 2x6s and making some kind of a base for it that you can secure those legs to. Because when that thing is spinning around, it will start jumping around. And I'm sure you can just look for a goofy video online of honey extractors jumping around. But it's one of those things where it can definitely probably tear up your floor. And depending on where you're doing extraction. And I would recommend, like, don't go into mama's kitchen and start doing extraction in her kitchen. Like, that's probably not going to go over well. So you may want to do that in the garage or some other kind of dedicated space for this. If you're trying to do extraction outside, put yourself inside of some kind of a tent with a zipper or whatever, because anything in the area is going to show up when they smell that honey. So making the choice on an extractor like that, if you wanted to do that, you know, it's definitely worth it if you ever want to go, you know, a sideliner, or even if you have 8 or 10 colonies. I mean, if you can set the money aside and get one, I think it's well worth it. And there's a lot of reasons. We're going to discuss it a little bit more about why it's a good approach, you know, using an extractor versus some of the other methods. But I think it was a worthwhile investment. I've actually got a company that wants to give me one right now, which I would probably just give away to one of you guys. But I don't think we're able to come to some good terms on that. When they basically want me to blindly write a nice review video and allow them to use my picture and my face and my name and all this stuff. And I told them, like, yeah, as long as I can get a chance to check it out, and if it's a piece of junk, I'm going to send it back. I said it a little bit nicer than that, but I basically indicated that if it is not of at least, you know, a baseline level of quality, that they would not be able to use my name or likeness or reference to the podcast or anything like that. You know, that I just need to return it to them and we terminate our agreement, because I'm not going to put my name on something that's not of high quality. And they stopped responding, so I'm assuming that that's going to be over with for now. But anyway, there are definitely a lot of options. Some of them are cheaper than others. And I think if I were going to do it again, I would still buy a cheap one. You know, I would get one like $350, $400 or something like that. If you can go in with a neighbor, that's kind of cool. But for me, like, our bee club does a thing every year called Extractaganza. And you can go there with all your honey frames. And I have never gone to it, you know, myself. But I know you show up with your honey frames, you do the extraction, and I'm sure you probably help in some way with some bottling or cleanup or some other kind of activity, but you have a chance to use, you know, their extractors. So that's kind of a nice little perk to being a member. Membership has its privileges. So we just talked about the extractors, and the way those work, again, is you're going to first decap the frames. So there's 3 ways that come to mind. One of them is with a hot knife. They have these actual, like, decapping knives that you plug in, and it gets hot, and then you just kind of slide it across the edge of the frame. and it kind of melts the cappings as you're going over and makes a nice smooth cut, or at least that's the way it's advertised. I used one twice. Maybe I brought a cheap one. Maybe it was a piece of junk. I don't know. But it was like burning the wax, and it made a mess, and the wax was sticking to the knife, and it was a disaster. I literally threw it away. I used it two times within a couple days, threw it away when I was done. It was just junk. And then you can just use like a manual knife where you would just manually decap and cut, like a decapping knife that's not heated. And I think I would still recommend maybe like boiling some water and just setting it in there to get it hot. You know, just put it in there for 10 or 15 seconds to get the blade nice and hot and then cut from there. There was something with that electrical one. It just wasn't right. But I think having a warm blade is still a good idea. The other method would be a decapping tool. And if you've ever seen these, I know this is weird, but it looks like one of those things if you had like a dog had fleas, just like a flea comb is kind of what it looks like. It has narrow metal tines on it, and they're sharp at the end and with little points on them. But you basically take this tool with, I don't even know how many, maybe like 10, you know, little sharp points at the end of them, and you just rake it across the cappings on both sides of the frame. And what you are doing is you are manually tearing open every one of those cells to decap it. And then you drop it in the extractor, turn the extractor on, and it does its thing. What I really like about using extractors is, minus cutting off of the cappings, like when you physically cut them off if you use a decapping knife, minus that, you keep the whole frame intact. So when you're done and all the honey has been extracted from that frame, you put all those frames back into the honey super and put it back on the hive that it came from. The bees will go back in there, and within a few days, they'll clean everything up and they'll put all the honey back into one place, and they'll polish up all the cells, make everything nice and pretty. It's really cool to see what they can do with that. And they don't have to redraw all of that comb. I mean, that is a lot of valuable drawn comb that you don't want to give up. So when you start thinking about how much it costs for an extractor, don't just look at the dollars and cents of that. Look at the time invested in building out all of that comb that you get to preserve by using an extractor versus some of these other methods. So I'll go into one of those other methods. Now, I have done this next one time. Not a huge fan of it, but I did it primarily because I had some comb that was a little bit goofy and it wasn't really attached very well. And I just thought, you know, there's a thing called like a frame blowout where you basically have a frame spinning in the extractor and all the wax and everything just completely blows out and it goes all over the place because the foundation, the comb, came dislodged from the frame itself. I have not experienced that myself, but I recognize that it is a real possibility, something that is certainly not really an issue if you're using your plastic foundation, but if you're using all wax foundation, it's definitely something that could happen. But I had some comb that was a little bit goofy that I had cut out from different areas that had honey on it, but it wasn't inside of a frame. And this is kind of like the crush and strain technique. And what you'll do here is you can manually cut the comb out, however you go about doing that. Drop it into like a mesh strainer bag. There's different types and different micron level. So the lower the number on a micron bag rating, the more filtration, or the finer particles that it will filter out. So you can get like 125, 150, maybe 200, somewhere in that range is probably a pretty good range. But what you're going to do is throw everything into this bag and you're going to start like basically squeezing it. You want to break everything down. Now, before I go, let me go back first. A lot of people actually throw all of it into a bucket and use like a mashed potato. Like when you're trying to prep mashed potatoes and you use the mashed potato crusher. Whatever that thing, thing that's got the little wavy thing at the end and you just break up your potatoes so you can mash them. They'll use something like that or a really large spoon or whatever to break it all up and then put it into the bag. When I did it, I just took a food grade bucket, stuck the bag into the food grade bucket and just started squeezing from there. So you can do that. And then I think ultimately I hung it. I had like a hanger above it and I tied it to the hanger and then I let it drip in there for like the next day or so. On top of my bucket, I use a metal strainer. It's a stainless steel strainer, and it's got a double metal strainer in it. So the top is 1875 micron. The bottom one is a 650 micron. And that kind of helps filter out the big particles and pieces that are coming from the extractor going down in. So that's kind of the top. But inside the bucket, I was using like a regular, I think it was like 150 micron bag. So it's easy. It's effective. You can definitely get honey out of it. I think what I ended up doing is after I let that thing hang for about 24 hours and I got all the honey that I could and squeezed a couple of times, I threw it in the freezer. And then mostly everything that was left was just cappings and wax. And I threw that in to like kind of render the wax and just boiled it up and then let it dry. And I ended up with like a 3 or 4 inch round piece of beeswax. It's kind of neat, kind of cool. So if you wanted to save that, you could certainly, you know, make use of whatever's left over. But in that process, you're completely destroying all of that drawn comb and, you know, that kind of stinks. But this is one method that you can use if you are, you know, doing it without an extractor. So kind of a quick recap of what you're going to need. Food grade bucket with honey gate. The honey gate is just a valve. You can buy them with the valve already on it, or you can buy the honey gate, drill a hole into the bucket, clean up the hole real well, put the honey gate onto the hole, secure it from the inside, and that is, you know, where your honey is going to go into. Into that, I put my 125, 150 to up to 200 micron mesh bag. On top of that is my double stainless media filter, and I have a link, or I will add a link to that today into our shopping list on the on our Discord page. But that's a double strainer. And then you need to have, of course, whatever you're going to put the honey into, some kind of, whether it's like little bear jars or mason jars or whatever you want to use to store them in. You're certainly going to want to have that as well. Maybe a scale if you want to kind of weigh everything so you know how much you got from. It's always nice to know what your starting point was. Like if you had a medium honey super that weighed 30 pounds and then you can weigh all the honey and then you can say, okay, cool, we had a 30 pound super produce 20 pounds of honey or whatever the numbers might be. Kind of fun to know that. But those are kind of the core components that you need. It's really important to filter out the debris and the things that are potential contaminants and things that you just don't want to have in there that are not honey. But that's, again, one method that works fairly well. Now, there are other methods that I have never used because I just can't really wrap my brain around. I just don't think it's really practical, but I will tell you about it briefly. They're kind of like gravity methods where you would take frames and use a decapping tool like we talked about, completely decap them, open it up, and then kind of hang it at a slight angle or lean it against something and basically let it drain down into a bucket from there. And after like a day or so of gravity, you know, draining everything out, you would then flip it over to the other side, open the other side up and do the same thing. Or maybe you could get it just right to do both sides. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to leave honey out where anything could get to it or any bugs may mess with it. Or, I mean, yes, I guess you can wrap enough things around it to where nothing can get to it. But that gravity idea to me, I don't like that. I would recommend either teaming up with somebody that has an extractor, get your own extractor, or do this kind of crush and strain technique that we're talking about today. Now, one last little note, and again, right, there's probably like 20 or 30 other ways that people have come up with to extract honey. The core things that you need to hold on to, I think, are make sure you're doing it in a sanitary way. Make sure you're cleaning everything both before and after you use it. If you are going to sell it, make sure you're following all your local laws, ordinances, and rules around any inspections you need to have, any health department rules. Labeling is a big deal. Sometimes you have to say very specifically, harvested in XYZ County, or must be, you know, wildflower honey. Like, you can't say it's all sunflower honey unless literally you controlled the bees and you know they went to nothing but sunflower, as an example. Make sure you're following those rules. But one last note I wanted to throw out at you is, before we kind of wrap up here, is remember that honey supers, they're space. They're space that bees can move through. And with things being as hot as it is, I don't know what you guys are dealing with. I'm looking at, like, If you're on the Celsius system, like 35 to 37 Celsius, 95 to 100 Fahrenheit is what I'm looking at, like for the next 5-6 days. And I'm not the only one. I know it's even worse. Like, I think in the center of the country and other places are going to be triple digits Fahrenheit for a few days. So, you know, the bees are probably going to be bearding. They're probably going to be uncomfortable. And you've had that honey super on there, which is space. You took it off. And, you know, you should go ahead and just put it back on anyway for them to clean up. But you might want to go ahead and leave it on there. they can use the space. And remember that heat is generally going to rise. So allowing more of that heat to kind of go up higher might take some of the pressure off of the bees down below. Just one idea. And there's nothing that would prevent you from even putting a second one on top just to give them, I would still put, you know, put frames in it, but giving them a little bit more room to move around in case it's raining outside, at least they can still get inside and have a place to move. Make sure they've got good access to clean water. This is really, really important because the bees use water to thermoregulate inside the hive. If they don't have a good source of water, this is really going to be problematic for them. So if they get hot and they're really stuffy in the hive, one of the worst things in the world can happen at this time of year. You've got this amazingly productive colony and you're super excited to have them and they're super excited to be there. And then it gets really, really stinking hot for a long time. And they get so hot and so uncomfortable because they've got a big population that they can abscond. Now, it doesn't happen all the time, but if they are prolonged, if they have a prolonged exposure to excessive heat inside the hive and there's no way out, they will think the best thing to do is to leave, which is catastrophic, right? Depending on where you are in your nectar flow, that can be it. They can fly somewhere else, try to find a new home, have nothing, and within a few weeks, they're dead. So giving them a little bit of extra space in the hive, maybe not necessarily a bad idea, particularly when you're not on a flow, right? There's no new flow. There's nothing that's in bloom. Having a little bit of a space in there for them to move around, not going to hurt at all. Okay, so final items here, take good notes. And we've talked about it before, but I'm going to say it again. The more information that you have that you can document now is going to be really, really beneficial for you next year and in the future. Tracking history, tracking trends, and things that you are experiencing yourself, not what somebody told you that they did in Nebraska or Maine or Montana or Florida, but this is happening in your yard. Your notes are more valuable than anyone else's notes because they are not on the ground with you in your yard. So make sure you're taking good notes about around everything that you're doing, but particularly with your honey extraction and everything you're doing with your honey management. Keep an eye on those moisture levels with any honey that you extract where it might be not quite capped yet. Definitely don't underestimate how much cleanup is going to go into this. There is going to be a lid. I forgot to mention this. There is a lid on your extractor that you're going to want to close the top of, like while it's spinning. You're going to want to be sure to do that because if you don't, you will find honey everywhere. Oh, and a lot of them have like a little mechanism in there that automatically shuts off if the lid's not closed. All right, everybody, special thanks to all the Buy Me a Coffee supporters out there. You guys are amazing. I love you. I can't do it without you guys. So thanks to all of you. Check us out at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's newbees.com. We've got nuke plans, swarm trap plans. We've got a couple different articles posted up there. The link to the Discord is in there. bestbeekeepinggear.com. We've got a lot of write-ups with Varroa mites, a lot of new beekeeper tips and tricks. And of course, you can go to youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. So if you found any value in anything you hear, see, or read coming out of this guy right here, feel free to buy me a coffee. Link is in the description. But outside of that, take care, be kind to one another. Remember that I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.